Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 389. I'm your host, Tired Brain Mike Wheels Apps Dude Guy. With me as always,
Tech Guy Star of the podcast, David McCartney, if I'm on the show.
It's always sunny in Kumamoto around this time of day. Yay, time zones. Our manager, Pat, Michael Baker, Gaiji Monogatari.
And happy Suikoden Day to all who celebrate.
Like me, I celebrate.
Yay.
Yep.
Like my copy won't
run. I'm going to get that eventually. Just to say I've actually played that series, but I'm still saving up for 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have
saving up for a while.
Hmm? Oh, I think I know what he's saving up for. Is it a game by the Gust Corporation, perhaps?
Well, technically it's Koei Tecmo, but yes, Gust.
That's true. Yes. Excellent.
Recoden 1 and 2, Unification, didn't it? Like it gave each of them a Gate Rune Wars and Gate Rune and Dunin reunification. Yeah, Gate Rune and Dunin Unification Wars. It's out.
It is.
They're both.
I've played it a bit. It's Suikoden on your modern console. I know they seem very good.
Yeah, I forget how much Suikoden you've played, Wheel.
I have played the first two games and beaten the first two games.
Well, now you'll play them again.
Yes.
Hopefully in the process, Suikoden 2 will be less buggy because that game is just bugged out the ass on PS1.
Yes, I fired up the collection. I'm like, I'm going to play some Suikoden 2. And I started a new game. And it's like, do you want to load your Suikoden 1 save? And I'm like, shit.
I would start with Suikoden 1.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's just going to bother me. That right there is going to bother me, so I need to just replay the first game.
I'm sure this bug is fixed, but I'll never get over the fucking bug in the PS1 version save import where it, like, it's supposed to try to import the name that you gave Tier, but it only... It just has McDole as his, like, name if nothing else is there, and it only overwrites pieces of it with whatever happens to be capitalized.
Oh my god.
Well, that's a bug.
A lot of players ended up with a character named Tukdole running around in Suikoden 2. Suikoden 2 is super buggy. Like, it's wild. I need to remember some of these. Just like, there's like entire mini games that are barely functional. Okay, I'm just looking at like Suiko Stars. Annalie attempts to sing a song when recruited, but the track fails to play, so you just sit there and stare at her for like 2 solid minutes while wondering if the game crashed. One character fails to appear in the castle after being recruited. You can gain 999,999 potch by purchasing items you can't afford. Animals and seeds do not show up in the farm if you hand in more than one of them at a time. Certain characters will improperly recruit at level 1. The things like track is like does not play properly.
Oh dear.
An additional sound bug where one of the characters that you recruit who's a dancer, like you have to dance with them, and it does, like, the track that you're supposed to be dancing to does not play properly. Certain enemies lack battle AI scripts. freaking.
It's a long list.
Party, okay. Yeah, like, Street Code and 2 is just bugged out the ass. Some characters join improperly at level 1, some improperly join at level 99. The kindness rune sets the attack value to maximum. Your party can be restored at inns without paying and without actually staying. Yeah, there's just all sorts of these. It's extraordinarily strange that this game came out and was as good as it was, given how much of it is just fucked. Oh yeah, there's this weird bug where, like, you can sort of, like, nudge an item, nudge something out of the way to get through to an area you're absolutely not supposed to be at yet, like, 30 levels early.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Certain recipes, like, for the cookie minigame, will just fail. Like, you just can't find them. The game will just never drop them sometimes. Yeah, just all sorts of. It's a really buggy game, and it'll be at least nice to have a version with a revised translation and some. It's like everything I've heard about the revised translation so far seems to be positive. Which is good. I'm looking forward to finding out how many exclamation marks there are. Because the original translation just, there are literally sentences that are followed by 10 exclamation marks.
Holy cow.
That may have been somebody trying to follow the Japanese text a little too closely, because the Japanese just love to use those for everything.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, it's nice.
I mean, trying to convince students that the interrobang is not normal English usage.
Yeah, or, like, if you're writing like that, people are going to wonder why you're shouting at them.
Even better, the vocabulary book that we were using had example sentences with interrobangs.
Oh no!
And so I would say, okay, guys, first of all, we would normally just write this with a question mark. Here's what it would sound like if you used a question mark. Now here's what it would sound like if you used both of those symbols together.
Yeah.
And it would be things like, oh, are those wild cherries? Are those wild cherries? And except a little more, a little crazier, because I can't do shouting.
Yeah, right, yeah, like you need to impress upon them what that means.
Yeah, but I mean, on the same page, we had what are those wild cherries and what is life? Who wrote this book? This is ridiculous.
It's nice that Street Code 1 and 2 are available again on a wide platform. The last time that they were available was on the PSP and PS3. And they're still great. I was replaying them last year, I think. I did not, like, around the time that I was getting into Street Code 2, like, they, like, announced this collection, so I didn't finish 2 again, but I ran back through 1, because 1 is, like, 12 hours long. It's super short.
Yeah.
That
was part of the reason I decided to start with 1, because it's like, this game isn't that long. There's no reason not to start with 1.
There's no reason to skip 1. I honestly think 1 is actually really well-paced. By the time you get your castle in Street Code 2, Street Code 1, you're, like, marching towards endgame.
This series I never managed to get grab, I think possibly because I never found it in any of the used game stores or pawn shops back in the late 90s.
Yeah, it got kind of rare kind of quick.
Yeah.
I found my copy 1 accidentally.
I did a lot of other things from that time period, but not Street Code. I never picked it up over here either. Reason.
Yeah, I got them when they released on PSN.
I got 1 randomly in a video store that was going out of business.
Video killed the radio store.
Was just like, oh, what the hell? What is this? It looks like a JRPG. Hang on, I'm gonna.
It was.
I don't think I ever finished it, but I played a good amount of it. I'm not gonna say I became a fan then and there, because that'd be a lie. I revisited it years later after probably listening to a Retronauts or something talking about the series and realizing that, hey, this thing I accidentally found, it's actually really good. I should play more of it.
Straight.
Yeah.
And there's some quality of life updates that I think most people will appreciate, most especially. The fact that you can run around the world map in Street Code in 1 without having to sacrifice your rune slot to do so. The way they implemented battle speed up is kind of bad, but also because apparently it also speeds up the music, which is lame. The other thing to remember is Suikoden 1 and 2 have really, really fast battles.
Yeah, they do.
Honestly, making them any faster will actually make them incomprehensible. because it does that thing that Eiyuden also does, because it's a successor, but if there's nothing to stop two attacks from resolving at once, the game will resolve them at the same time. Which means
so
that
you can
a
have
lot
two
of
guys punch each other out.
Think more like, let's say two of your characters are attacking the same are attacking two different enemies. Both of those will just play out at once.
Oh, okay.
A lot of times you'll have, in the original translation, it was labeled free will, but it basically meant auto attack. And most combat, you don't need to worry about doing more than auto attack. See, free will, and your characters will just split their attacks amongst everything, and you'll run through a round. This is a 6-character party, but you'll run through a round in 3 seconds. It's a very speedy game already, so the improperly implemented speed up function that hopefully they'll patch at some point. But the improperly implemented speed up function is not exactly causing the game a lot of problems. There's allegedly something to make it so that moving equipment across characters is easier, which is good because inventory management is the worst thing about the first couple games. There are 108 characters potentially in your castle, and at least half of those are party members, or potential party members anyway. And moving things around among them could be a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But allegedly there's something to make that a little easier, which, big deal, very important. Overall, I'm optimistic. I'm looking forward to when it arrives, and I'm glad that I didn't have to worry about finding a physical copy. It was pretty, they just did it, which I was not expecting them to do.
No, it's pretty plentiful.
Yeah, and it seems to be, based on what they're saying, the pre-orders were better than they expected. So.
That's good. That's good.
Then. Unfortunately, what they're doing with that in response is to make it fucking gacha game, but
gacha games tend to pay for other things.
Hopefully
they
make
a positive thing you can say about them. They make money.
Yeah, hopefully they make an actual game at some point. But allegedly, the gacha game takes place between 5 and 2, I think. For those unfamiliar with the series' lore. 1, 2, and 3, having been written, directed largely by the same group of people, are all in a row in terms of their timeline. And then the original series creator and director leaves. And and the resultant team seems deeply unwilling to the remaining team seems deeply unwilling to push forward with the timeline in the hopes that maybe they'll someday lure him back. Sadly, he passed away just before Eden Chronicles came out. But the team then throws out a prequel that takes place 100 years before Suikoden 1 in Suikoden 4. And then with 5, they made a game that's based off of, like, one character's backstory from Suikoden 2. There's a guy that you recruit in Suikoden 2 named George Prime. That's how that's supposed to be pronounced. It's spelled weirdly. It might be Georg Prime. But Georg Prime is like, if you talk to him enough, he talks about a prior conflict he was in that involved, like, regicide and shit. And then when they were making Suikoden 5, they just made that the game. Like, that, and, like, his weird, like, 3 paragraphs of backstory got expanded out into being a full game. And 5's actually pretty good. But, you know, it was one of those things. Like, after that, they kind of ran out of steam. There's a couple of alternate universe games. There's Tear Priest, which is lackluster, and there's Woven Web of the Century on PSP, which did not come out in English and is terrible.
The head writer, he just kind of quit for years, and he came back and did something.
Yeah, he was gone.
Was for part of the Hyakuden.
Yeah, he was. He was the Eiyuden Chronicles creator. He passed away just before that came out.
Yep, and like the implication is that they were never going to move forward with Suikoden because they couldn't have him doing the story anymore.
That was my impression, was that the team seemed uncomfortable trying to tell more stories that took place after Suikoden 3, just because it was clear that they were building up to something and they didn't want to fuck with it.
Yeah. Well, they don't have much choice now, but I did remember hearing also that the gacha game actually, again, takes place between 2 other games.
Yeah, from what I can tell, it takes place between 5 and 1. Because 5 takes place about 15 years before 1. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, eventually, we just get them, like, packaging up everything that's in the gacha game and selling it as a normal-ass game. But, I mean, who knows? It's nice to see the series come back. One day I intend to actually read the Chinese novel it is loosely based on, but I still have not gotten around to that.
The Water Margin?
Water Margin. It is one of the great classical Chinese novels. There's a handful of classic Chinese tales that a lot of things end up being based on. It's like that, Journey to the West, and why am I blanking on the third one?
Sangokushi.
Sangokushi, Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms, yeah. And there's one more that I've encountered called Legend of the Condor Heroes. Which is published a bit later, but it's like one of the foundational novels in the wuxia genre. And there has been at least one game based on it that I have played. It's kind of up there, like neoclassicism, I guess. I know.
Yeah, it's very influential at the very least.
By the way, our pause is watching the show.
I I can't imagine why, but good to have them.
We have to be on our best behavior.
Oh, that's going to be even worse.
No fucking swearing. No fucking swearing.
We're talking about, it's going to start talking about Hakenden or something.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yeah, the Condor Heroes was a series written in the 50s as part of the Chinese cultural renaissance, I guess. Also, the English title is weird because there are no actual condors in China. Somebody just got really creative with the English translation there. I originally knew it by the translated title of the PlayStation game, The Eagle Shooting Heroes, which is pretty much what it translates into. So,
yeah, I'm not just thinking about like old Asian novels that get adapted a lot, so that's why my brain just went to like, oh yeah, Hakenden.
Mm-hmm.
Also has a number of old games based off of it.
Oh, apparently Street Fighter Online. Street Fighter Online, which I've never heard before this.
Yeah.
It was a PC game in 2008, and it included two characters from the Eagle Shooting Heroes.
Beautiful. I'm sorry, I need to bring this up because I was looking at like the list of Hakenden games and ran into Idle Hakenden.
Which one?
Idle Hakenden.
Idol. I-D-O-L. Idol.
Yes, yes, like Idol Singers.
Okay.
It's very strange. If you need an adventure game for your Famicom, I suppose there are probably worse ones. There are definitely better ones, but there are probably worse ones. It's always interesting to see, like, when, like, raw cultural, like people just sort of draw on that cultural heritage. It's like, yeah, no one's gonna stop us from doing whatever we want with this. Same with like Tengai Makio Jiraiya.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. Okay, we got another one. Has anyone here tried the fan port of Sonic Unleashed on PC? I have not tried it because I don't think Sonic Unleashed is very good. But I've observed
levels are pretty good. Everything What's else, that? I said the day levels are pretty good. Unfortunately, that's probably like 10% of the game.
Yeah, like even though there are a similar number of day levels, the night levels end up being about 10 times as long on average. So yeah, honestly, if you can, in that version, cheat your way past the night levels, I would advise to do so. It's the night levels are really just, like, someone played God of War 2 in 2006 and was like, yeah! Yeah! And the thing is that God of War 2 is ass, and Sonic Unleashed is worse. In terms of like the night levels, but yeah, someone ported a bunch of Sonic games on 360 PC, and they released great and polyfully used. Yeah, like it definitely helps open the door. Recompiling is still an extremely complicated process. I don't think you're going to see this happen to that many games, but it is interesting. It's nice that like that tool is out there. My hope would be that someone does it with Ninja Gaiden 2. But yeah, I'm trying to think of like other things that would be interesting to see released from Xbox 360 prison.
Blue Dragon.
I could see
Ace Combat. Blue Dragon.
Lost Odyssey.
Lost Odyssey, yeah, maybe like that. Blue Dragon.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how many things are still just exclusive to the Xbox 360?
More than you'd think.
Yeah.
How many games that we would care about are still exclusive to Xbox.
More than you'd more think. Than you think.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, like the immediate obvious ones would be stuff by Mist Walker, as we just mentioned, stuff like Lost Odyssey and to a lesser extent Blue Dragon. But yeah, there's some, it, like, you know, it's a very powerful tool if there are people with sufficient determination to make use of it. It will help a lot in these processes. It's obviously not a magic bullet. There's a lot of work that has to go into making any recompilation work. But hopefully we see some of those games escape being just trapped on the 360 forever. Anyone remember that Shadowrun Arena FPS on the Xbox 360? I do! I remember it in part because part of the Kickstarter, the Shadowrun Returns Kickstarter, part of the pitch was basically one of the people who had worked on that essentially apologizing. It was, I'm sure, not really in his hands. I'm sure that at some point Microsoft was like, these are what sell. Make it an arena shooter. Tremendously ugly video game. But let's be a pretty good arena shooter if you could ignore the fact that it didn't make any goddamn sense why it was made. But yeah. And also available on Windows as a launch Games for Windows Live title.
Good old Games for Windows.
Yep. That initiative lasted.
That's how I played through Fallout 3. The Games for Windows.
Why, though?
On my Mac through boot camp.
I have questions that I don't think will get satisfactory answers.
It was Fallout. It seemed right to play it on a computer.
Fallout through the Fallout, baby. And then you were disappointed.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons.
It's not.
Then you tried playing one of them on PS3 for some reason.
No, that was Skyrim.
Lovely New Vegas. What was that?
That was Skyrim. Skyrim. Yeah. Yeah. That
why did you not play that on PC?
I don't think I had something that could run it at the time.
I suppose that makes a certain degree of sense.
So I got it on PS3. My preferred platform at the time, and that did not end well.
Nope, couldn't be me. Never enjoyed using the PS3.
Yeah, it was not great.
I hate its L2 and R awful, dreadful.
Yeah, they were bad.
I
feel lost multiple controllers to those fucking buttons not working right. They seemingly
broke. I feel like they're broken when they work.
Yeah. Not a great console.
Proud prediction.
Many great proud games, tradition. Bad console.
A proud tradition that continues to this day with the PS5, whose shoulder buttons also often feel like they're broken.
Oh, God. What the fuck is
that? There come a day when the game is made exclusively for controllers with back paddles, or are there just too many people with normal controllers to avenge syndrome? I don't foresee that being the case for honestly a multitude of reasons. One, of course, you'd have to standardize around that. Two, I don't know how much you, like, the only thing I've used that actually has back paddles is the Steam Deck, and I'm constantly hitting them by accident.
Yeah.
And I hate and they serve purposes, but, like, ultimately the kinds of games that companies have, like, built themselves around making are not meant to be complicated enough to require, like, multiple additional extra buttons, especially in a place where you could hit them accidentally.
One would hope.
The closest thing I can think of would be MMOs, which, you know, are still popular and still hard to adapt to a controller, but a couple of additional buttons won't fix that.
Yeah.
Like, That's the thing. You would need to be building a game that made sense on a controller, had already very complicated controls because it's needing additional buttons, and but didn't need that many configurations, so you wouldn't expect someone to use a goddamn keyboard. And I can't imagine what that looks like that manages to be mass market. I don't see that happening. As Fireminer points out, like, no one really uses the touchpad on the PS5 controller. Mm. And, like, which makes sense because no one used it on the PS4 controller, because as it turns out, it
kind of sucks ass.
Hard to use. Like, you have to take to effectively use it, you have to essentially take one of your hands off of the main part of the controller. If you want to actually use that. What's that?
You would need three hands.
Yeah, something like that. Like, you have to take, like, it's a small surface. People don't super like touchpads for fine control anyway. Like, the entire thing, whenever I look at that and the way they've trapped themselves into, well, we just have to keep having this on the controller, it's like, why? Like, the only way anyone still seems to use it is as a giant, another giant button.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know why you did this in the first place. A solution in search of a problem. Mecha simulators like MechWarrior can always use more buttons. That's true, but one, MechWarrior hasn't been, like, a relevant force in the market for a long time, and two, if they can use more buttons, I think they need a lot more buttons than that. Like, if you're going to go full mecha simulation, you probably want at least as many buttons as the keyboard offers you. You know? Like, you either are trying to make something that's a fun mecha action game, in which case the current crop of controllers probably has about as many buttons as you need, or you're trying to go full simulator, in which case you need way more buttons, and you're doing the Steel Battalion shit again. Which I love. I love Steel Battalion. But I mean, there's a reason that no one's doing Steel Battalion anymore. Speaking of which, is there a point of re-releasing Steel Battalion without the big-ass pilot and console controller? Absolutely not. Pointless. Like, without the big controller, like, there's just not a lot of, like, the controller kind of is the game. It's like playing Guitar Hero without a guitar controller. But if Guitar Hero requires you to have five hands, it's just one of those things where, like, I don't even know if it was possible to play Steel Battalion without a controller. I'd have to assume there must have been an option to. I've certainly never tried it. But you'd be missing the point. There's no, the entire thing is built around the experience of using the giant, wacky-ass controller. There's nothing to be gained by throwing that out. I could see maybe, like, if you really wanted to make that experience happen again, honestly, I think it would make the most sense for VR Psychos. Like, you just make a VR game that involves, like, moving around a digital, like, mecha dashboard and, like, pulling levers and shit. I think that's the most, quote-unquote, practical way you could do that. You know, ignoring the fact that VR is pretty inherently impractical, it's probably the most logical way you could make that happen nowadays, but... let's see. Some games like FF16 were released with the Denuvo anti-piracy at launch, and then a few patches later, Denuvo was removed. Now the publishers have to pay the Denuvo server for it to work, and a lot of people don't like Denuvo because of its negative impact on performance. Do you think that this will be the future of PC game releases? Most piracy happens around the first 3 months of the game. If I can get a game on GOG, then I wouldn't mind getting it, like, a year late. Yeah, I mean, like, everyone involved knows that Denuvo is going to go away. They're just, you know, waiting until it's deep enough in the lifespan that, like, the people who would buy it early. Like, the vast majority of consumers are going to buy it right when it comes out. If they don't have an option, they will be more likely to just buy it. And then a few months later, once you've gotten that initial burst of sales, you remove the Denuvo so that you can stop paying the Denuvo bill, and you get like the PR thing where like a bunch of websites report like this game that came out a few months ago has had Denuvo removed. And so people that are like on the fence or waiting for Denuvo to go away, they come back and they pick it up now that it's on sale or whatever. And you get that second burst of sales because suddenly people are talking about it again because Denuvo went away. Honestly, like, I think it's built into the marketing plan of some games at this stage. Just like, you know, X number of months later when our like subscription for this title to our B2B subscription to this title for this title to be in Denuvo goes away, we like get another burst of sales because Denuvo went away. I do think that, you know, some amount of the, like, Denuvo is the reason this game didn't run well. Oftentimes, it's actually more likely just this game just came out and it needs patches. Certainly, like, it probably does something to performance, but I think that, like, the amount that it's doing is probably overblown, and it's just that a lot of games come out and they don't run perfectly because that's what they do everywhere. You know, if it very much like the by virtue of Denuvo being a service that needs to be paid for on a per title basis for however long you're going to use it, like a consumer just aware of how that works is going to be aware that, you know, if you wait long enough, you'll be able to get a version that doesn't have it. And I would say that that's you know, that's just something you have to build into your calculus at this point. Context, FF16 recently received a patch that improves performance and removes Denuvo, which makes people think right away that Denuvo has a negative impact on the game in the first place. Again, I think that's, like, there's probably some performance impact, but I think the amount of performance impact caused directly by Denuvo is probably pretty limited. Again, a lot of people just, a lot of games just come out and they have performance issues because that's how game development goes. It's not that mysterious. And, you know, you see games, people coming out and complaining, games coming out and people complaining that, like, oh, this runs like shit, before it gets patched, like, all the time. It's just people, when they see Denuvo on the game, it's like, it must be because of Denuvo. And it's like, it's probably just the same thing that happens with every game, basically every game these days. Anyone remember Death's Bank and Costume Quest? I do. I kind of wish I didn't remember Death's Bank.
What's Death's Bank?
Death's Bank was like a comedy action RPG thing that came out on 360. I think it was like an Xbox Live arcade game.
Wait a minute. Never mind. Death's Bank, Thongs of Virtue. I'm remembering this now.
Yeah, that was the sequel. But yeah, like it's a sort of parody action RPG type thing. I found the humor to be a little tedious. God, there's a third one. Oh God, yeah, they made a third one. They just I'm gonna say this thing's name, and you will be immediately transported to 15 years ago in the worst way. Because. They dropped the name Death's Bank from the third one and just called the third game The Baconing.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. It's 2010 internet all over again. But yeah, that's why, like, it just... I'm sure they're fine. I did not play them. I find them to very much reek of a very specific time in a way that I do not want to go back to.
Oh, we have a review for this.
What was that?
We have a review for this. Adrian reviewed it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
He liked it.
Yeah, I remember people liking it at the time. I just, like, its sense of humor repelled me. And since the sense of humor is so much the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Costume Quest was from around the same time. It was like a trick-or-treating themed RPG.
Yep.
Let's see.
Remember
by
that
Double Fine.
One better.
The Psychonauts developer. Yeah, I like, I'm a little more fond of Costume Quest due to, like, the childlike whimsy that it has. Whereas,
I remember this. At the time, Adrian and Nyx both reviewed it. And yeah, they did a dual, like, siblings review.
That's cute.
Yeah, I mean, it's listed under both their names, but yeah, it's... The entire review is color-coded red and blue for who's talking, and with the occasional line of black where the quote-unquote adult in the room is saying things like, play nice or I'll take away your controllers. Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm not sure if it's on our current site, but it's definitely on the archived site, and it's the entire review is them having a sibling argument over the game.
Nice.
Yeah, Costume Quest was like, it's not amazing. It's more cute than anything, but like I have more fondness for it than Deathspank's like reheated 2010 meme humor. So
okay, yeah, we do have it on the review on the main site now, and it is still color coded.
That's good. I'm glad that got preserved. If I was bringing up, I always love it when we do special reviews like that. Yeah, no, that's it's fun when people can get creative in the critique process.
Oh, it's probably because Costume Quest 2 had a limited run games release announced.
Yeah,
and then there was also a backtrack for about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I remember so when that happened.
We tend to bring forward the old reviews when they actually become relevant to something we're currently updating on, so yeah, which is why my old reviews will probably never reach the main site unless I can find a reason for them to.
Well, someone needs to re-release the Mermaid Saga game or whatever that one thing's called, Mark of the Mermaid.
Oh yeah, that was a fun one, weird one.
Yeah, Fireminer goes on to say, I feel like that period when those two came out was prime time for 90s adventure game nostalgia. Nowadays, people are getting nostalgic for 90s and early yachts visual novels that they may not have even played, like Too Hard getting a remake of all things. That was big if you were into the scene back then. Yeah,
It takes about 20 years for nostalgia to really hit hard enough for this to be possible.
Yeah. We are seeing, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, I've seen this noted before. It's like, it takes about 15 to 20 years for something to go from the thing that used to be popular to the thing that was popular to used to be popular to, oh, wow, I wish we still had that thing that was popular. And that's usually when you have the huge nostalgia fest and suddenly you've got, like, 5 movies based on mid to late 70s TV sitcoms coming out in the same year.
Yeah.
Which happened, or other stuff, or for that matter, the Star Trek movies didn't happen until just about 15 to 20 years after they first the series ended.
So. Yeah, does remind me that we're also just seeing a resurgence of some of those, like, games, in part because the general idea of that kind of purely narrative-driven, low mechanical complexity design has, like, sort of come back into being. Into popularity and, like, has more of a niche, where for a long time certainly in America, there was like a heavy tendency to look down on games that were of limited mechanical complexity. I think that the expansion of the audience and the aging of the audience and the new generations coming in as the ones being marketed to has sort of given a resurgence to games that were of that sort of more limited mechanical complexity having more of a place in the market, which is a good thing to see.
Yeah. Also helps that the drive towards bigger, better graphics has not stopped, but slowed to the point where you can look back and realize that, you know what, sometimes those old graphics were nicer.
Sometimes you can just, and how can we make something that looks nice on a lower budget? Well, you know, we can get away with a lot if we're just doing a handful of, like, really detailed illustrations.
Yeah. Or even just, like sprite art is, I mean, it can be expensive and intensive to make, but at the same time, it's still quite often less expensive and more visually satisfying than deep 3D renderings.
It'll be less expensive than a AAA 3D game. And if you don't have the money for yeah, but if you don't have the money for a AAA 3D game, you'll be better off going with something like that than trying to pretend that you have the money for a AAA 3D game.
Yeah. It's like sometimes the best way to beat them is not to play the game.
And Boss sticks up for Team Pixel Art. We'll have to have additional connoisseurs. Let's see. It asks about the importance of Tenchu to the stealth genre. Is it true to say that in a roundabout way, Tenchu also had an impact on open world games? Games such as Way of the Samurai and Dead Rising has something similar to Tenchu, be it the movement or environmental interaction. Assassin's Creed is like Tenchu meets Shenmue. I mean, like, Way of the Samurai is just the same developer doing something different, but because Way of the Samurai and Tenchu 1 are both Acquire. But as for this, I mean, a little, I hesitate to say how much something like Assassin's Creed was paying any attention to those instead of, like, some of the other things that, like, Ubisoft itself and other companies were developing at the time. Like, there's a lot of Prince of Persia DNA, there's a lot of Splinter Cell DNA. Like, you put those two things together and you do the open world thing that was already in vogue in 2007, and you kind of already have, like, 70% of Assassin's Creed's design. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it did nothing, but I do think that it would be a stretch to say it was super influential on those genres, just because, like, it does have what is, for the time, a relatively early sort of open environment design for a stealth game. I don't know how much, like, people were paying that much attention to it. Like, even in its day, Tenchu kind of got overshadowed by Metal Gear Solid, which was a stealth game that came out around the same time and absolutely obliterated it in terms of, like, critical and commercial success. It's more like stealth games sort of built back up to it from base premises. Enough time passed for Rondo and the Grand Stream Saga to be considered looking good. No.
No, why would you put Grand Stream Saga back in my brain? These people ain't got no faces.
It really is off-putting that, like, the game, like, the no-face decision is, like, seems to me to be an obvious choice that was made to save on rendering load. Game that was primarily top-down. But then a bunch of the scenes would zoom in on their lack of a face. It was weird.
You're reminding me of the Steam version of Atelier Sophie.
Okay.
Where, due to I'm not sure what was happening there, but all the characters' eyes either disappeared or got randomly reassigned to a different spot.
Oh no.
And yeah. Yep, that got a very specific mention in my review for the Steam version.
Mine are also asking, or Virtual Hydlight, is it looking good now? Super Hydlight recently had an anniversary now. Super Hydlight at least looks like a normal-ass game. Virtual Hydlight looks like dog shit, but in a way that's extremely funny. I encourage anyone who has not looked up Virtual Hydlight, who's somehow in our audience, to please go look up Virtual Hydlight, which the persistent rumor about that game is that it was made in the engine for a golf game, and looking at it, like, yeah, that does look like an action RPG that was made in the engine of a golf game.
Which Hydlide?
Virtual Hydlide for Sega Saturn.
Virtual.
Okay.
Kind of a remake of Hydlide 1. It's a special-looking game.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have an answer.
Great. So, I was on the Switch today. I actually downloaded the Switch Online N64 mature title app.
You could play Turok 2 and 3 and basically nothing else.
I tried to play a game called Shadow Man, which I have never played before. Oh, so my question is, was there ever a point in time where that game was considered good, like when it came out?
Yeah, actually.
Really?
It's kind of a 3D Metroidvania thing.
Okay, because I didn't care for it at all after about 30 minutes.
It has like a really bad PS2 sequel, Shadow Man Second Coming, but instead of spelling second like a normal ass human being, they spelled the entire word second, but for some reason replaced the S with a 2.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. That one lacks all the structural ambition of the original Shadow Man. But Shadow Man 1, not an amazing game, but it does have its charms for being like a rare 3D attempt at a Metroidvania.
Okay.
Apparently it had a remastered version in 2013.
I thought it was more recent than that. There is a Shadow Man remastered.
Released, Never mind, that was 2021. I'm reading the dates before it actually gets to the proper date. So the re-release of Shadow Man was in 2013, and the remastered version was 2021.
Yeah, that was done by Night Dive, and it's a good remaster. I don't think Night Dive has ever done a bad remaster.
Well, in fact, they did a great remaster of Turok 2, which I already have, so I'm not going to play the old N64 version.
Yeah, that's just a historical curio at this point. But yeah, I know they're doing System Shock 2 now, which is nice. Shadow Man had like some popularity back in the day for being like kind of an unusual thing. It's technically based on a comic book, just like Turok. Turok is also based on a comic book. It's just neither of them are comics anyone remembers at the stage.
It was just more edgy than people would expect from Nintendo, and that's kind of what they're going for, I'm sure, with some of the mature titles. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's in part just that each app has to be rated separately. So if they're going to put M-rated games, they don't want to make the entire app be rated M. So it's just like, here's a separate one.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you don't want kids accidentally playing those games.
Yeah, old as they may be, I don't think many children need to be exposed to cerebral bore. Yeah, I would describe Shadow Man as being interesting. It's not an amazing game, but it has its moments. It was unusual for the time. I think that part of the claim, God, one of them made that.
Well, it says a claim, but then there's an iguana, so I'm sure they merged at some point, I guess.
Iguana was one of the claims, not sure if it was a wholly owned subsidiary or what.
Okay.
Let's see. Yes. Okay, yeah. So Iguana was a company that, like, the most notable thing about Iguana is that eventually, like, large portions of it became Retro Studios.
Okay.
like a number of people who had worked on Turok and like Shadow Man left Acclaim and end up becoming the nucleus of the Retro Studios team.
Okay. And then they did Metroid Prime.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
And you can kind of see how like Turok 2 Seeds of Evil eventually became.
Yeah, I'm seeing how they got to it now. Sure, now that you told me all that, I'm seeing... Okay, I see how you got to Metroid Prime and why it's so good. It was your third game in that style, and you really hit your stride. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, brief time with Shadow Man was this guy swearing a lot, and I'm shooting dogs. It's like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah.
Nintendo trying to be edgy. It's like, all right, I get it, but no.
I will bring up that Turok 2's Japanese title is infinitely stronger than Turok 2 Seeds of Evil, because in Japan, Turok 2 was released as Violence Killer, Turok New Generation.
Wow.
Violence Killer.
Beware, Oblivion is at hand. Yeah. They tell you the cheat code in the middle of a very scary cutscene.
One other thing I will say about Turok that's very funny to me is that it has like one of the most childish cheat codes I've ever seen in a video game. Turok 2 had a cheat or not Turok 2, I think Turok 1 had a mode you can only unlock through cheats called Quack Mode. And it just makes the game like
ducks.
No, it's not a duck thing. It is a swipe at Quake.
Oh.
It disables certain rendering features to make the game quote unquote look more like Quake.
Wow.
And the the way that Turok 1 cheats on the N64 worked was that they were a sentence that it had all of its vowels removed. And the Quack Mode cheat was the sentence, "You call that animation," without any of its vowels.
Ugh. Okay.
Like, it was them making fun of the animation. It was an extremely childish thing.
But, like, I don't know, I always thought that Quake was so much worse than Doom.
It's a much less fun game to go back to. I found the most fun that I've had playing Quake was when I decided that that I was going to play the entire thing with extremely inappropriate music in the background.
Okay.
And so I had a good time playing through Quake's first episode while in the summertime by Mungo Jerry just blared in the background.
In anyone the familiar with that? Okay.
Imagine me like needle gun at some sort of weird orc thing repeatedly while that's playing in the background. You have basically the entire experience.
Yeah, there was a weird thing you could do in Quake 2 where it's like you would start a new game, but then you would switch to multiplayer, and then you could actually do a two-player match in the starting point of the single-player campaign. It was weird. Because otherwise it wasn't a choosable map, but you could kind of glitch the game and turn it into one. And then I remember Turok 3 Rage Wars. I had a friend and we rented it a bunch of times. We never beat it though, because we'd always get to the first level where you can get turned into a chicken, and we would say chickified, and it wasn't beatable in two player as far as we could discern. But then when I played by myself, it was very easy. It's like, all right, so I don't know. It was odd.
So there actually is a bug in Turok that makes the co-op campaign in Turok Rage Wars that makes the co-op campaign impossible to complete.
Okay.
The only versions that don't have it are the gray cartridge versions. You could only get those by sending an affected copy to Acclaim, and they would send you another one.
Wow.
Breakout Turok Rage Wars is consequently one of the rarest M64 games, quite possibly the rarest, though probably not the most valuable.
I wouldn't think so, no. And apparently Blockbuster didn't know that because... Or they just kept
neither
giving
knew
it the
nor
same
cared.
Shitty copy, yeah.
I mean, if they were still making money off of renting out the unusable copies, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, it was only in co-op. It was... Honestly, not a game a lot of people were probably caring that much about, other than to do... It's like, Rage Wars is weird, because it's trying to be Quake 3 Arena.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm like, they were making fun of Quake, but then they copied it.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had a lot of insecurities. The official Turok 3, Rage Wars was a spinoff, the official Turok 3, Shadow of Oblivion, is desperately trying to be Half-Life.
Okay.
But, yeah, like... It was weird franchise. It was a weird franchise. We'll leave it at that.
And there's a new one coming out at some point.
It's there, probably. I would believe that. Good
God. And then there was a weird whatchamacallit. Oh, I'm sorry, I got distracted. I'm looking at the chat. Is that a spammer? What is the deal?
Yeah, I'm jumping into moderator view.
Lost my train of thought because of that stupid.
In the summer when the weather.
Do you want to buy viewers, Joe?
Best view.
We have the cheapest viewers on the internet.
But he's using weird, like, Dutch symbols. What are you writing? Ugh. So, anyways, yeah. Oh, then there was the one on PS3 and Xbox 360, and that was bad. I had a friend who bought it, and I just thought it was so stupid, like. Dinosaurs would knock me down, and it took like a full like 5 seconds to get back up. I'm like, what? What? No. I don't know. Thought it was weird. And then they gave him a mohawk and tried to turn him into like a marine or something. Yeah.
I'll hit some more of these questions. 5 minute ask. Had Code Age Commanders been localized, how successful would it be? I don't think there was a lot of hope for Code Age Commanders. It was kind of a, you know, it's one of those things that, like, everything I've seen, it looked fine, but I don't think that it had, I think there's a reason that they didn't really try to make it, they didn't even really try to make it happen in the U.S. Like, it's another one of those attempts that Square made at polymorphic content, and it does not strike me as something that they would have had much success. Like, by all appearances, it doesn't look bad, but I don't think it would have stuck out in a relatively crowded market. Is Code Age as a budding franchise failed as badly as Advent Rising? There's like a million things that went wrong with that. Like, there's no way that would ever Pro Skater 3 and 4 Remastered just been announced. They said that these two games won't have a career mode. They did say that, like, no, what they said was that they will both have, like, 2-minute career mode, which I'm upset about, but, I mean, I'll still play it. But, basically... 3 is going to be exactly the way you remember it. 4 is going to be something that they fuck with to try to make the goals work more like Tony Hawk's 1 through 3.
Okay.
I think that's lame, kind of short-sighted. Also, you're Microsoft and Activision. You can afford to remake a PS2 game properly, but... Oh, well.
Well, it is going to Game Pass because, hey, Microsoft owns Activision finally, right?
Yep.
They are going to Game Pass, but yeah, I remember 4 didn't time you, and I thought that was...
Yeah, you can still free skate around.
Yeah, it had its pros and cons. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm a little disappointed, but I'll still play it.
Yeah.
Something to be said about keeping your product line simple to not confuse the customer. Enough's been said about the confusion caused by just the existence of the Genesis peripherals. But what about the PC Engine? Like, NET debuted the core graphics and super graphics on the very same day. Then came whatever the PC Engine Shuttle and Turbo Duo were. I mean, like, the Turbo Duo made sense just by virtue of the fact that it was just like, here is the system and its CD add-on.
But, like, that's not even getting into things like the arcade card and the super graphics and, like, the PC Engine LT, which was just a PC Engine with a laptop form factor.
I thought the super graphics only had, like, 7 games.
Several of them. Several PC Engine, like, things only have a handful of games. Let me see.
I actually have a whole book on game consoles. I probably could have looked that up if I had more time. Oh, well.
That requires effort. Yeah, the super graphic.
Yeah, it's over there on the shelf. I can't reach, sorry.
What is the actual number of things available on super graphics? Let's see. Yeah, there are 5 Super Graphics games. 1941, All Dines, Battle Ace, Daimak Imuta, and Motto King Grandzord. And there were a couple that, like, were enhanced if you ran them in the Super Graphics. It was a very poorly supported thing.
Kind of sounds like the 32X, huh?
Yeah, there's a bit of that. Although, in terms of, like, actual games that came out, 32X has that beat by a mile, like 8 times, because there are about 40 32X games. There aren't any good ones, but there are about 40 of them.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's me being mean. There's, like, 2 good 32X games. And there's also that incredibly expensive Spider-Man game.
Which one?
The Amazing Spider-Man Web of Fire. The last 32X game.
And I suppose Konami isn't going to make any more of the TurboGrafx mini consoles.
Nope, those are dead and gone.
Yep.
They're $300 to $400 on eBay is what it is.
So I got one sitting around. The list of 32X games. Brutal Above the Claw.
No, not
Carnage. That.
Primal Carnage, right?
Cosmic Carnage, Cosmic Carnage. There is also Primal Rage, though.
Oh, Primal Rage, yeah, with the dinosaurs fighting each other and they can do fatalities.
Golf Magazine, 36 Great Holes, starring Fred Couple.
Only 36? What else
do you want? Yeah, 36.
It's not nearly enough.
Only like 2 courses.
Listen, that's 2 full courses, Wheels. What more could you want?
More. Need more.
More!
More!
How much golf do you need?
More power. More golf than that, sir.
Hey, remember Fuji Golf?
I don't.
Okay. It was an old Windows game. Yeah. Oh, well.
So there were many Windows golf games because Windows was seen as the platform for the old people.
Yeah.
I need to...
It still is. I use my Windows all the time. I don't want no licks.
Wow.
Golf Classic. Pebble Beach Golf Links. A lot of Pebble Beach floating around in the golf game. Sphere in the 90s.
Is there a golf game that actually lets you hit your ball into a parking lot?
Probably not.
There should be.
Probably at least one, but I couldn't tell you which one. Okay. Welcome to Lee Carvalho's Putting Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You have chosen a one wood.
We do have a lot of questions in the podcast channel. Okay.
I just plugged in my PS5 controller. Can everyone still hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Your screen is black, though.
Yeah, well, that's because I'm switching games.
Okay.
I lie, no kiss.
Hello? Hello? Shit. Hello. God. Hold on.
Sometimes there's couches.
Hello. Hello. Hold on.
Sometimes.
Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. My PS5 controller took over Discord output. So none of this has been on the stream. I fucking hate.
I got to hear all of my golf. Hey.
Okay. Should be good now. In theory.
Okay.
No, I don't think we're good. I think we're very bad.
Oh.
But, like, what would happen if you just use an Xbox Series X controller on your PC?
Huh? You can't use that for PlayStation Remote Play.
You can't?
No. You have to use a PlayStation controller. Positive.
Okay. But you can use a DualSense on Xbox Remote Play and Game Pass.
Yes.
Right. Okay. What the Golf is great because the first time you play a course, you don't actually know what's going to happen when you attempt to hit the ball.
Got one more in the question pile or in the chat. Marie Kondo was at the height of her popularity. I saw game collectors asking themselves, what is the point of owning a game that I probably will never replay? Aside from preservation and convenience, what is the argument for owning the physical copy of a game you only mildly like, or a game you won't replay for reasons like it being too long? There's not really a strong argument.
No.
I just got broke brains.
No, I'm not a collector anymore. Yeah. You know.
At one point, I just started having to unload a few things just because I realized, you know, I would like other people to enjoy these.
Other people can enjoy these, and I can enjoy some money.
I mean, there's that too, but I mean, a lot of the games I'm talking about would get literally pennies back on the penny. I've got one or two games on the shelf that I kept largely because the guy at the store actually said, you know what, this game's a lot better than the price we're supposed to be paying you back for it. You might as well keep it.
Yeah, that happened to me a few times at GameStop. They offered me like a quarter for a game. I'm like, oh, I'll just keep it.
Yeah.
But then there were times where they offered me nothing and I said, can you just throw it in the trash for me?
Yeah. And plus, I tend to hold on to games from the series that I really like, just because I do go back to those occasionally. Except for Xeno Reborn, that is the one game in the Metal Mech series I have sold back.
You did not need that in your life?
Did not. No, I will have and will replay your first Xeno on Vita a couple times in my life, probably. Mm. Largely because Xeno Reborn made me nostalgic for that game.
Wow, that's not good.
That's a nightmare.
And I mean, yes, in my impression for Xeno Reborn, that was one of the few things I could say in the conclusion was like, it has actually made me nostalgic for the game that it was supposed to replace, and that game is not good. So.
Hey, come on, man.
But yeah. Speaking of which, though, I'm good. I'm interested in seeing how much I'm going to get back for the game I'm currently playing. So. I wasn't able to find it on shelf at the used game store earlier. So I've only got a vague idea how much it might be. But, you know, Game Boy Advance games are increasing in price lately. So, you never know.
I wrote a mean comment and I got the response I deserved.
Oh, what was the mean comment?
Well, he started in Monster Hunter, so I said not an RPG.
Okay, Mr. Call of Duty.
Well, that's not an RPG either. Then you don't even like that game. What? What?
I've successfully confused the hell out of you.
Okay, oh, moving on.
And I finally gave Black Ops 6 a fair shake, and it's like, I don't need to play this anymore. There was a Ninja Turtles event, so I got a bunch of Ninja Turtles themed gear, and it's like, all right, I don't need to keep playing this. I got a really weird looking Splinter skin and got a gun that's supposed to shoot buzzsaws, but the turtle variant shoots little pizzas. Except that it's very hard to hit people with it, and sometimes you have to hit them twice, and it sucks. So.
That's my understanding as well, too, Fireminer, so thank you. But thank you for keeping a lookout. I'm going to replay.
Did anyone play Avowed yet?
I have not. I keep meaning to, no. But I'd probably end up trying to play it on Steam Deck, which I have no idea how it works.
Well, I made a character, and then I was going to, like, stream it, and then I didn't stream it. But then I remembered that I had this nifty Pillars of Eternity guidebook that goes over, like, the whole world and the gods and the different factions, mm-hmm. and I thought that might be a good little refresher since I haven't played Pillars of Eternity 1 or 2 in a long time. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to reference my book and read up on the different gods and stuff. I mean, character creation was fun. So the thing is, you, like, in Pillars of Eternity, you could make a godlike, and there were different types. Like, you could do a fire godlike, a death godlike, and then there was, like, a nature one. And that was fine. So that was just one of the races, and there were variants. And the thing is, they all had weird-looking heads, so you couldn't wear a helmet with that race. Now, Avowed, you play as... You have to play as a godlike. That's who your character just is. But they're, like, the nature type. They're not the death or the fire type, which is kind of boring. But they, you know, they can look like they have wood and coral and other and mushrooms and shit coming out of their head, which is kind of neat. And they had to kind of simplify the stat system, which makes sense. I mean, you still have, you know, your might, your resolve, the same stats, but it obviously they're going to work a little differently because it's more of a Skyrim style game. So, yeah. So I haven't actually played it yet, but I had fun with the character creation. I watched the opening cutscenes and looking forward to it.
Heard good things. Seems fun.
Will anyone here try Split Fiction? I'd like to try it. I think it's that game with the two female protagonists from that guy who swears a lot at the Game Awards.
That could be so many people.
It's that the guy with the thing.
It's another one of those woke games that some people just don't like because they're stupid.
Oh,
no.
Oh God. I don't want to think about that. Okay, so, yeah, okay. It's from the It Takes Two guy.
Yeah, so it looks cool.
I'm going to play it with.
Yeah, it looks neat, but I don't want to spend money on it, so I'll wait for a sale or Game Pass.
If I had someone to play it with, I wouldn't be against it, but I don't, so.
Yeah, like, I don't think it's mandatory co-op, is it?
It's compulsory co-op.
Oh, well, then never mind, then. Okay.
Like, that's the entire point of this, and It Takes Two. Like, that's what that studio makes.
Okay.
And, yeah, without anyone to play it with, it's like, well, not really for me.
Yeah.
I like that someone's making that kind of game.
Yeah, if it was single player, I would wait for a sale, but I don't... Yeah, I still haven't played It Takes Two, because I just don't have a person to play it with.
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad that it, like, someone's making that kind of game, because, like, there are a lot of things that you can only do in games where you force multiple people to cooperate, but, you know, I'm not the audience for it. I don't have anyone to play it with.
Yeah, and my take on it would be, when I was a kid and I had friends over a lot, yeah, anything with couch co-op was great. Anything two-player was great, but nowadays I'm old. I don't go anywhere. No one comes over, and it's probably just online only. So, yeah, don't care. Looks like a neat game, but yeah, not for me if I have to find another person.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Monster Hunter Wilds for a minute since it just came out?
If you must.
Okay.
Yes, it came out, sold a bajillion copies. It's a nice improvement over Monster Hunter Worlds. It is not nearly as good as Rise.
At least it's not World.
Yeah, it's definitely much better than World, but yeah, it's like missing so many of the improvements and stuff from
Rise.
It's kind of disappointing, but it'll be a
lot. I do wonder what the Rise team is working on.
Hopefully something better than this. I don't like to be the one that complains about story in a game, because I'm fine with lots of story in games, but
if the story was
Monster Hunter's not great about it, which is one of the reasons that Monster Hunter Worlds was not my favorite, and this one has the same issue.
Yeah, allegedly you can skip cutscenes this time, but it's kind of a band-aid fix.
Yeah.
Just really, really feels like they felt to go mainstream, we need to have a story. And like they went mainstream, and I don't think the story is why.
No, definitely not.
You know, this game's already sold well north of 8 million copies. I don't think they're hurting.
Wow.
We'll see what the follow-up ends up looking like.
Oh my god. Someone just sent me a friend invite in Monster Worlds. I cannot figure out how to get to it. Oh god. There it is.
Okay. I want to put some of the questions in the podcast section of the Discord
invitation list. Oh, Hollywood.
Which mediocre game franchise puzzles you the most for its success?
You cut out for a second there.
Far Miner asking, which mediocre game franchise puzzles you the most for its success?
Monster Hunter.
Call of Duty. What? Shut the fuck up.
You're just being mean for the sake of being mean.
It's Call my Duty job really to be mean to be mean. Damn it. You're stealing my shtick.
Call of Duty really does feel like it to me, just because like, whenever I've actually played them, it's like, this is a thoroughly unremarkable first-person shooter. I'm sure there must be something I'm not getting, but I don't feel like it's that much.
No, they just haven't released a really exceptional one in a long time. You know, I don't know. Like, I really like Modern Warfare 2019, but then...
That's 6 years ago.
Right, and then I just decided, let me go back and just do Modern Warfare 2, the campaign, because I never did it, and then it's like, oh, this isn't even good. You know, I mean, so I had some fun with Modern Warfare 3. Black Ops 6 is very mediocre. It's just the very definition of brain rot, as far as I'm concerned. Just every color of the visible spectrum on screen at all times, and just the lime greens and the hot pinks and the, I don't know, just juxtaposition of eye-wrenching color combinations.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's just, after how many years and how many entries, there's still lag, there's still glitches and bugs and physics issues and inconsistencies with hit detection and damage and it's not anywhere close to where it used to be, and I'm not really gonna defend it anymore. I mean, especially the horrible business model, $70 a year for each new entry, plus the battle passes and overpriced bundles of cosmetic crap that they're charging you $20-$30 for. You can't call them microtransactions anymore. So
we used to get expansion packs for that price.
Exactly. Well, it used to be you'd pay $15 and you'd get a map pack, and it would include like new zombie levels, and it was actually not terrible, but you know. Well, I mean, Modern Warfare 3 decides that zombies and even single player are going to more closely resemble Warzone, you know, the Warzone map. It's like, I don't want that. That's stupid. So.
My god, if anyone is watching on stream, you can see the parts of this game that really pissed me the fuck off. Because this isn't a cutscene, so you can't skip it. It's just characters slowly walking through an area that would like to just be exploring the fuck myself, please.
This is wild to me, because this is an ancient design idea that people would largely pass that was done a lot in Unreal Engine 3 games, because those games had trouble loading
But yeah, like this idea of like the slow walk and talk with almost nothing happening.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to diss like the Monster Hunter World / Wilds team too much because the core gameplay is really good, but like the,
like I'm sure there's mandate from on high to make this as broad appealing as possible, and there's like a very strange and short-sighted idea of what's broad appeal.
I mean, I can't imagine showing like the opening to the game, which is stuff like this game, which is stuff like this, then show like your average person the opening to Monster Hunter Rise, which almost too quickly throws you into your first hunt. But I think that's a better way, like just a better way to get people into this franchise. It's, I don't know.
So, on the topic of more mediocre games, I could not even tell you the appeal of League of Legends, Dota 2, Counter-Strike GO. I actually have quite a long list of games that I just...
It seems like just competitive games in general do that to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They can be fun for a little while, but I don't have the patience to play all day, every day to compete with these, you know, 12-year-olds on Adderall. So... I don't know.
Man, I feel like I need to be on.
I feel like I need to be on performance-enhancing drugs to be good at these games, and I guess I'm just too old for them. I don't know.
But why do you have to be good? Just have fun.
But I don't have fun when I'm losing. I get mad, and then it's not fun anymore.
We don't lose to Marvel Rivals that much.
We're competitive games.
Yeah. Who are these little cat people?
Feline.
Yeah. But there was a bunch of them just now on the screen.
The ones with the weird hats?
Yeah.
The Widwuds or something.
Okay.
Yup, nub.
Yeah, no clue. No clue.
But yeah. Okay. To hit another question.
Oh, and just for the
there's
record,
no palamutes in this game. What the fuck?
I think that GTA 5 is a very mediocre game, and even though I got a free enhanced edition for PC, I don't understand that because even on my current rig, that game runs like absolute shit. So I don't see what these enhancements are going to do for me other than just kill my frame rate even more.
Mm.
So anyways, next question.
Let's hit one that we'll kind of have to put some of this aside because I haven't finished my F9 replay. How much of Garland from F9 is an antagonist, how much a villain, and how much a plot device? That I can't get too deep into because I haven't replayed that section yet.
See, Garland in Final Fantasy IX, he's more of a like a gray presence behind the throne because he's the reason why everything's going on. He is the reason why the entire world is messed up. He's the thing. He's the guy who made the villain for the game.
Yeah,
but he only shows up towards the end, and he is quite soon destroyed by his own creation.
Yeah.
So he's, I mean, you could call him a villain because he is, you know, trying to forcibly drain your planet of life to keep his own planet alive. You can call him an antagonist since he is kind of working against the heroes, but he's, I mean, yeah, plot point is a good way of describing him. He is a plot important
character. He's more an explanation for why things are happening.
Yeah. He sort of fits the Emperor role in a lot of Final Fantasy games, where I think Final Fantasy II was the only one that had a character called the Emperor who was actually the main villain.
Wrote themselves into a corner with that by virtue of having the first time they did it, just have him come back from hell. So.
Yeah. So, like, Final Fantasy IV, you had multiple kings who were actually dupes for the real bad guy. In Final Fantasy VI, you had the Emperor who was bad, but he was then killed by Kefka. In VII, you had the President Shinra who was killed. In X, you had the leaders of the temple who were also killed. Previously dead and then killed
again. And we're often already dead to begin with.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of Final Fantasy games have this kind of character where he is the leader of the bad side. At the same time, he's almost immediately supplanted by the actual villain, often his own son or creation or otherwise connected character.
Yeah, like, he set things in motion, the things he set in motion destroys him.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, several of the words used in that question could be applied to him, but none of them are really accurate because that's not the role that he is filling in the story.
Let's break out one of those Latin phrases that that Final Fantasy likes. He is the agitator, the agito.
Well, I mean, agito is also
13.
Agito is the Japanese word for secret hideout.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Latin phrase, which means, like, to set in motion.
You know, I was just assumed it was the Japanese word. Go figure. He's the agitator. He is the instigator.
Yeah, that's another good word for it.
Yeah. He is the crux of the plot. However, he is not the not the villain.
Yeah. There's a follow-up question. How can you make people hate a dispassionate antagonist? I think it's pretty easy if their goal is sufficiently disgusting.
A dispassionate antagonist will not hesitate to kick a puppy out of the way just because he's in the way.
Yeah, like a truly dispassionate character who, like, their goal is sufficiently repugnant is pretty easy to make hateable. Like, yeah, or, like, at the very least, someone who is sufficiently disinterested in the suffering that they caused is pretty easy to make hateable. Cinematography has plenty of framing methods to imbue a scary or disgusting attribute to a character without saying anything. How does that work in games? You know, people speak by their actions. Like, certainly cinematography also exists in games, especially more modern ones, but, you know, characters speak by their actions. If you
also
have someone...
And character design is very important.
Yeah, design's a huge part of that. But, you know, like, you have a character that, you know, does something sufficiently awful and doesn't even seem to think too hard about it. The audience will respond to that level of callous inhumanity. Is Dark Void being a cover shooter a mistake? I mean, you were betting hard on anyone remembering what Dark Void is, but the answer is yes. I don't know why you would make a cover shooter out of a game whose primary other gimmick was jetpack. It just entirely at cross purposes with each other. If you like, a cover shooter is about, like, very carefully selecting. Like, a good cover shooter has you carefully selecting and making choices about where to stay put. A jetpack game should be about, like, near constant motion. You should not be incentivized to sit around when you have a jetpack, because the fun of a jetpack is flying the jetpack.
Yes.
And I believe that would
quite possibly the terror of trying to land the jetpack.
Mm-hmm. But it's all about the motion.
Yep.
And I believe that was the tenor of their views at the time. Why is this like this? Oh, hey, Pew. And Pew is trolling you too as well.
I changed the game. Did it? I fucking hate Twitch. Why is Twitch so bad?
I just assumed he was trolling you the other way.
No, I think
watching this happens. Pew jumped into Wheels' chat to say, "Whoa, Destiny actually looks playable now."
Kind of interesting that there's just that one girl with modern-looking glasses. No one else has eye problems, apparently. And her glasses are kind of at odds with the more primitive...
I would have trouble hunting monsters with glasses.
Yeah. She's not a hunter.
Maybe some of them have. Maybe some of them have.
See what I'm saying? Though, why does she look like she's like from the future or something? I don't know.
Well, they are from, I would say, more city parts of this world.
Okay. Than
the area they're currently in.
Maybe some of them have
civilized areas.
Okay.
I would never troll Mike. Okay, Pew. Okay.
Pew, I think we've talked like 3 times, and I don't think at any point were you not trolling him.
I thought that Pew should have been on our award show.
That would have been fun, but I would imagine he was busy.
Yeah.
You can find Amiibo and Amiibo cards relatively easy, and they aren't tied to any one-time use code, but what about other toys that may not stay in circulation for long and have one-time use codes? Should we be worried about the contents tied to them being lost media in the future? WWE has new costumes that are tied to Walmart or Target exclusive figures. I suspect that people are already in the process of dumping those, so officially lost, yes, but that's true of most of the games that they're attached to, too. You can't really buy old WWE games after a certain point. Reminds me, someone re-release No Mercy, please. I beg of you.
Yes. Giggity. That should be on Nintendo Switch Online, God damn it.
That'd be so many licenses to work through, but it would be worth it. I would also accept as a consolation prize Virtual Pro Wrestling 2, I believe. I just disappeared.
No.
Who just?
I just realized that Pew made that joke right as I'm sitting through a boring cutscene, not actually playing the game, I should say.
Is Alma the girl with the glasses?
Yes.
Oh, wait, no. Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 is WrestleMania 2000. No Mercy must have had a corresponding game, though. Feel like.
Corresponding what?
Well, I didn't realize...
A corresponding Japanese game.
Oh.
I didn't know that... I guess there was another game in between Revenge and WrestleMania 2000, like...
It's WCW, NWO World Tour, Revenge, yeah. WrestleMania 2000, and No Mercy.
Oh, but I thought I was reading somewhere that they were working on another WCW game for switching to WWF. I could be wrong.
Maybe. I've never seen evidence of such a thing.
Okay.
But yeah, Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 seems to be the closest that we got to in a no-license version of No Mercy. Well, let's all play Def Jam Fight for New York. That game owns. Also, welcome back, Ivan.
Yeah, I was scrolling through one of the channels in Discord, and I think I tripped my computer's, oh no, I hate GIFs mode.
Whoops.
It will occasionally, I mean, it hasn't happened in quite a while, but it will occasionally just crash the entire computer over a video codec error.
Mm-hmm.
Done it for years now.
Jeez.
Okay. Let's hit another
YouTube. So. It used to be anyone if I had YouTube on in a different tab for too long, it would just crash the computer.
Fireminer in the Discord asks, does anyone remember Monday Night Combat and Super Monday Night Combat?
Yes.
How many games have we lost? Honestly, probably the majority of them. Sadly, I think that probably the simple majority of games that were like that kind of competitive online game that requires servers to be kept up, I think most of, like, the majority of them are gone. It would be impossible to actually number those, but it's a lot. But I do remember people being briefly into Monday Night Combat and Super Monday Night Combat. But I didn't play them because I'm antisocial and sad.
Monster Wilds has a spider monster. I don't care for it.
How do you feel about that?
I'm about to fight it. I don't care for it.
I'm gonna...
Is this a trigger warning?
Maybe
it's a warning for wheels.
I don't think it actually looks that much. It's not like a realistic looking thing.
There's two spider monsters. It's
the same kind of what? What? Excuse me?
Read the chat.
I am, and I'm concerned. I'm deeply concerned.
Everyone,
what did you think of the Elden Ring spider enemies that looked like severed hands?
Oh,
oh, I'm getting flashbacks to the Shadow Temple from
not played enough Elden Ring to see them.
Oh yeah.
Here's one Gaijin might have some insight on. Or did Japanese game magazines give away games or peripherals? Gun fans have this term called Kensho Bean for the little accessories for your Gunpla modeling magazines giveaway.
Not often direct accessories. I mean, Famitsu still has like downloadables and stuff, but I remember one time I got a pair of gloves with a copy of Famitsu magazine. They were like very thin gloves that could be used for touchpads.
Mm-hmm.
So the gloves would actually work with like with, I think it was designed for a PlayStation Portable mind, but yeah, that kind of thing. So that kind of thing is usually done separately. Like you will find, in the magazine area. I mean, like right now in the magazine area, you can. I know a place where you can buy a Jack Frost nightlight.
I love that.
In the bookstore.
Nice. That'd be cool.
I'll get you a price quote. It's over in Yumetown.
Appreciate it.
Oh, it's not actually a spider because it doesn't have eight legs.
Yeah, it's true.
Also, it seems to have a flower for an ass.
It does have a flower for its ass. It's highly accurate.
It is spiderish. There we go.
Yes.
It's making spider me think adjacent. Of all the Scarlet Rot stuff from Elden Ring and the Millennia fight. Millennia, whatever.
Is that the last boss?
No, she's, she's kind of a post-game boss. She's extremely difficult, and in her second phase, she has this spell where she just turns into like a giant pink flower and inflicts scarlet rot, and it's crazy. But then you can learn that incantation after you get the remembrance when you beat her, and then you can also get her katana.
I love katana.
You can get a Mortal Kombat 2 character in Elden Ring?
No.
Katana, not Kitana.
Oh, yeah, Katana. Sure.
No, I was yelling at wheels, don't worry about it.
Well, her katana has a very high dexterity requirement, but then, and I think it inflicts either bleed or scarlet rot, but it's like, I don't know. I tried doing like a dexterity build based around that sword. I even got it to +9, and it was like, it's not very good. But I got some really cool weapons in Shadow of the Erdtree. Maybe the one thing I like about it is that you do get some really cool items. It's just the whole thing's too difficult, and it's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to start calling it a day, so I'm just going to ask Gaijin to tell us about his latest book.
Buy my book.
Oh, and we keep forgetting about the soundboard!
Just a moment.
God damn it!
Hold on.
You don't have to.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
That's enough, dude. Yeah, at least three people have done so far, so yay. But, oh, yeah. So, once upon a time, I decided, you know, I'm going to try and write at least one thing in every single subgenre of science fiction and fantasy possible. I'm slowly working my way towards that goal, and most recent example is in the nearly newly condensed, still trying to figure itself out, influx subgenre known as lit RPG, which is basically attempting to translate the concept, various concepts of video game or role-playing games into an actual narrative format. This You will find lots of arguments online over how and where and when and what should be done with this. But if you want to see my take on it, we have Vainglorious, Long as the Night, which is, in the dedication, it's dedicated to all the games I've played of a certain genre, which should be quite obvious as you keep reading. because there are a lot of, I mean, especially Castlevania references here and there, but it's like I took a concept of a, started out as a concept of a Metroidvania game based around Universal Monster Universe. I had some really weird, I've had some really weird ideas just sitting in the back of a class or standing in the back of a classroom watching students do worksheets. and so we basically have like took the concept of a Metroidvania based around monsters coming out of the movies and kidnapping the main character's friends and doing stuff, and somehow turned that into something quite a bit different, but at the same time sort of the same, and it was an experience to write, it's an experience to read, and I just had a lot of fun doing it. And yeah. Yes, it was Vainglorious. Yeah. Long as the Night. By Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. It's certainly long enough. It's like I thought.
Guaranteed to have better dialogue than an actual Castlevania game.
I did pull some direct quotes here and there.
A part of me wants to know, like, one of my favorite deep cut quotes that probably didn't make it, but that I had cause to think of earlier this. Yeah, I had cause to think of earlier this week. The line near the end of Lament of Innocence where Leon screams at a vampire, "I'll kill you and the night."
See, I haven't actually played that one, so...
Yeah, I understand. Maybe for the sequel. Yep.
What is a man? A miserable little pile of secrets.
That one does get that one does get dropped, or paraphrased, yes.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, in...
That is a quote from a philosopher.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Or a reference to a philosopher, yeah.
Nietzsche?
Yeah. No.
Much older than that.
Okay.
Much older than that. I'm here's now miserable pile of
secrets. Continue plugging while I find the exact philosopher that's stealing from.
It's André Malraux. But, yeah.
Gotcha.
So, who's actually 20th century? So, I mean, it's
it's still Dracula saying it before the actual person who said it.
Yes, wow. By quite a while. But okay, so yeah, so again, Vainglorious, Long as the Night, and then as always, we also have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor for more of a tabletop role playing experience. Officially not lit RPG, largely because I did not actually spell out the stats anywhere in the series, and also the characters, the players firmly stay in our world while imagining everything going on. Apparently these two things are not negotiable when trying to describe something in this particular genre. I figure. Like I said, if you think RP gamers like to argue over what makes an RPG... nothing on people who are into this particular genre of literature. It's like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Combines book nerds with people who argue about RPG definitions.
Yeah, I can just imagine some of the old Gallery of Rogues from RP Gamers old forums are getting into this genre and seriously annoying everybody with their arguments. You know exactly who I'm talking about. Oh, well. Yes. And then if you want something a little, well, I mean, I'm not going to say less fantastical because these are all Japanese folktales, but we have Tanuki as a Teapot, Japanese folktales, retellings and cultural observances and other things, all about animals. Again, all of these under the same pen name, Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. As you know. I love my in-laws, and they're nice enough to let me use the family name. So,
Much appreciated.
Yes. As always.
But, Joe, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me on Blue Sky, Twitch, YouTube, Smokin' Joe Gamer. My current display name on Blue Sky is Joey Jojo Jr. Joestar Shabadoo's Bizarre Adventure, which will probably get changed at some point.
That's the worst name I've ever heard.
Joey Jojo. And then I'm on twitch.tv/smokin'joegamer and YouTube also. So I've been doing some Final Fantasy 14 live streams on Friday nights. I thought it had a nice ring to it, Final Fantasy 14 Fridays. Haven't really gotten any views yet, though. And I might think about doing, like, maybe Wednesday and Saturday instead. I'm not sure. And then I may stream Avowed at some point. I did a bunch of Final Fantasy-themed videos last month. Those are all on YouTube, so you can check those out. You know, I played 10 and 12 and 13-2 World of Final Fantasy. What I want to do for Mario Day, I was thinking about trying to just do a speed run of the first four games, you know, 1, 2, 3, and World. So I was practicing Mario 3 a little bit today, and, you know, I remember obviously where the whistles are, and there was just one stage in World 8 that gave me a hard time. So that's something to work on. And yeah, I'm also hoping to do some more like guitar and like music related content on YouTube. We're gonna see how that goes. Like I was thinking about doing like a guide for people like buying their first guitar, like what I would recommend or what to look for, what to avoid, that sort of thing. Yeah. So I thought that might be fun. And then for years I've been saying I want to do like a review of each of my guitars. I have 8 of them now. So, you know, might be fun to just do a separate video for each guitar. Just talk about, you know, what I like about it. Do I think it was a good deal? That sort of thing. Mm. And then, you know, I did some more modifications on my customized Ibanez guitar that, I don't know, maybe people would be interested in that. Who knows? And at some point I would like to just sit down and really just do some writing to throw up on Substack and, you know, see if I can get any subscribers there. So that's something else to think about. And that's, so I'll have more information on that if I ever, you know, kind of really sit down and just write. What, you know, I haven't done that in a while. So I am thinking about just trying to kind of maybe take a break from like gaming content, just because I'm just, the views just aren't there, and you know, there's other things I want to do. So yeah, definitely check that out if you want to. Oh, you're fighting another creepy looking spider. Oh boy. You will not see me ever stream a Monster Hunter game. It just won't happen. Sorry.
So yeah, check the Twitch, check the YouTube, check the Blue Sky.
Yeah, and I've I got Game Pass again, so yeah, I am gonna play Avowed. I am gonna do Indiana Jones. You know, I don't know if I'm gonna stream those games, but just on the topic of what I've been playing, it's mostly been, you know, it was Final Fantasy games all last month. It's been Final Fantasy 14. A couple days of Black Ops 6, enough to realize, yeah, I don't really want to get sucked into this. And I don't know, maybe we'll do Marvel Rivals again on Sunday.
Yes, I need to try out the Thing and Human Torch.
Yeah. So, that could be fun. And I was playing some Pokemon Scarlet today, and I finished the Teal Mask, so now I gotta do the other DLC, and I still haven't done a full scenario of Civilization 7, but I'm looking to play that some more, and then maybe do a video, like, tutorial for anybody who might be struggling, because it is a little more complicated than 6 was, in my opinion. So.
Hmm.
As for this very podcast, you can ask us questions via the comments section whenever Wheels puts it up on the website.
Yep. Oh, and we'll be DRB. Off next week.
Yeah, I'm just going to get to that.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, normally we would do, I would say that you can catch us Thursdays at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. We will be off on this coming Thursday. I can't guarantee I'll be there for shenanigans this week either. Normally we have shenanigans at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Sundays. But yeah, so March 13th, we will be off. But God only knows when this episode will go up, so that might be irrelevant by the time you listen to this. But shenanigans every Sunday, even if I'm not there, I'm sure Wheels and Joe will find something to get up to.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's you can also ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord if you go to the podcast section. Get an invite to the RP Gamer Discord by going to rpgamer.com and clicking the community tab. It's a lovely community. Whether you want to ask us questions or not, we're always happy to hear them. Otherwise, I think that wraps it up for us. So, see you, Space Cowboy.
See you.
See you.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you.